Hello, Ready to Shake Sunday Night, host of the Jake and Gino podcast, here with my co-host, the multifamily mentor, the coach, the chef, the father of six, the best-selling author, the G-Daddy, Gino Barbaro. Gino, how's it going?
Jake, I'm doing good. I got one quick question for you, though, brother. Have you been to Fat Tuesday since our last podcast? Because you were talking about Fat Tuesdays the whole time and wondering if you've been to one since we've had the last podcast.
You know, I haven't. I don't necessarily prefer the watered-down drinks, and we're going to get off that, Gino. So I don't know. It's going to be a while before I go back. Maybe next time in the Caribbean. But getting off the cheap drinks, we have a very special guest. Today's guest is a featured Forbes 40 Under 40 CEO and founder of Nitya Capital. He has 20 years plus experience in the multifamily space and has built a vertically integrated organization, which we love, all about vertical integration, over $3.5 billion in assets under management. So without further ado, Swapnil Agrawal, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Hey, it is our pleasure. Now, my buddy Gino there, you know, he's a little bit more of a, you know, romance guy. He wants to rub your shoulders and talk to you a little bit. I like to jump in. So let's give folks the origin story. Let's talk about, you know, going back in the day, starting the company. You built a great organization. Give us the high level overview of that.
Yeah, look, grew up through very humble beginnings in India, in a very small town in central India. And, you know, always had aspirations and dreams to do something big in life. And ended up in Houston, Texas when I was 15 years old. I had just finished my ninth grade in India. And, you know, the connection, there was some family connection through my dad. So we came here, and my first, you know, interaction with, you would say, Class B workforce housing multifamily was as a resident, right? I grew up in these communities, similar worse communities, the first 8 years of my life. And so that was my exposure to the West, which was the visions and the dreams I had growing up in the East about the West were of prosperity and wealth and happiness. And then I moved to A-Leaf, Texas. And the truth couldn't be further off from, you know, what you imagine or what you see in the movies. And so, you know, in fact, I would say that some aspects of this, of living here versus living in a small town in India, where I would actually prefer living in that small town. Even my house might have been a little bit worse off, but security, right? Security wasn't an issue for us back there where I was growing up. You know, people knew each other. Every neighbor knew each other. Your friend, your family, your big, you know, so I grew up in that environment. And then you come to the West, so you get the worst of the West, right? You get the worst quality of living. And then the mindset is also...
I'm going to jump in real quick on you because I grew up in a very small town, and I think that's reflective of smaller communities and neighborhoods. I think regardless of where you tend to be in the world, the bigger the city, the more issues you potentially have. Because likewise, I grew up in a very small area. People knew each other's name. You could leave your doors open at night, and you know, if your car broke down, your neighbor's coming to help you. So I think there's a component to the size and the values of where you're at. And sometimes that gets watered down as the populations and the cultural values and norms that we're accustomed to get diluted. So I just want to, you know, I'll take you to upstate New York to the Finger Lakes one of these days, and I'll show you what I'm talking about. But carry on, sir.
Yeah. So, but you know, you're right. So, you know, so that was my first exposure, and you know, again, all of this adversities and challenges, and I think were advantages to me to what it made me today. And, you know, because you just had to grind harder than anybody else to achieve the same result, right? So if somebody else would have had to go to school, it's an easy way for that person to go. His parents can drop him in the car. For me, it was an adventure because either I could wake up at 5 and take a bus and or walk, or if it's raining, then figure out. So there were always parallel paths that I learned to, you know, to achieve my objective or aim and goal. I always have multiple paths, right? But it's like baseball, right? You hit 3 out of 10. So once you get lucky, right, and luck comes in, right? He's like, but this guy is so lucky. But luck only happens to people because you might not know how many times he had failed before to get lucky that one time. So people mm-hmm. focus on that one success, but there were like 99 failures before that,
mm-hmm.
right? So it teaches you the tenacity, the grind, and look, culture, and you learn to adapt, right, to a whole new culture, and you got to figure it out. You're alone, right? I was the only child. I don't have any brothers, sisters. My parents were, my dad was working in a liquor store. My mom worked at a daycare, right? So I had to figure it out for myself,
mm-hmm.
right? And that's the environment I grew up in. And it made me, I think, who I am and hopefully who I have to become later on. Because this, I believe, is just a start for me. So you know, went through the high school and grew up in Ailey, went to Hastings High School, met a lot of close friends there. So really, it was a nice journey. I wouldn't change anything about it, right? It was great to learn about.
It made you who you are.
Yeah, it was learned to grade, made great friends. Got adapted to this culture, and I felt that, hey, this is not something scary. This is something that I can conquer, right? And for whatever, you're in your show, like you said, Joe Rogan, I wanted to conquer, right? So I said, I think that I can conquer this because I feel I have an edge, right? And I still do. I feel I have an edge because my tenacity is unmatched, right? So I have that upbringing. My risk-taking ability is unmatched, right? Because for me, it's nothing, right? I came from nothing. I'm happy. I live a very simple life, right? Mm-hmm. So that allows me the freedom, right? And then God has blessed me with the intellect, and again, I read a lot. So I mean, I have all that pedigree that you could envision. But I had to take a route. I came to this country not as a citizen or a green card holder. I came as on a student visa. Then those were separate challenges. So I had to go, you know, get admission, get a student visa. Then I had to find an employer who could sponsor my H-1 visa because it was all means to an end, right? Because I always wanted to be an entrepreneur, but I just couldn't do it. I didn't have the status, didn't have the capital. So I went to the route. I got my finance degree through University of Texas in Austin. And you know, being a finance degree holder, you know, the path of success in that field is, you know, become an investment banker and go private equity or hedge fund. And that's the route I took. I took on this position with a very prestigious bank at that time, Simmons & Company. It's a very boutique oil and gas investment bank, which later got acquired by Piper Jaffray now. But I was one of the four analysts that got picked in the country, and did the 2-year program. So got my training, the finance training, as they call it there, and went in the private equity side. I was always looking to explore new things. So I took on this new job, which is a private equity firm, and the position was in Hong Kong. So it was an American fund, which had just raised Russell Platt, who's become my mentor and my friend and an investor now, but he is the original, you know, Mesref fame. You know, he started Morgan Stanley's, the mezzanine, the Morgan Stanley's fund, which is the Mesref fund. And he went on to start this fund, which is called Forum Partners. And they had, this is 2006. So they had just raised $800 million with literally nobody on the ground for Asia Pacific real estate focused strategy. And I enjoyed Simmons, but oil and gas wasn't for me. I wasn't an engineer or a geologist. I was a finance guy. I didn't see any potential for me in that. So I took on this role and moved to Hong Kong. So 2006 to 2013, I spent in Hong Kong working for Russell at Forum Partners. And I mean, we did really well. I mean, look, 2008-09, the crisis happened. And for that period and vintage of the fund, you know, we performed. And really, the mandate was to invest in real estate assets or real estate platforms across Asia Pacific. So, you know, I would travel to some remote parts of China to do site visits. I'll be in Korea, I'll be in Japan. But again, this gave me additional mindset to start adapting, right? To learn about different people, to do business with. You know, you could have the best convertible mezzanine bond you finance to a Chinese company. But if the sponsor or the state doesn't want to pay, I think they don't have to pay you back.
Mm-hmm.
Right, this is what you're seeing now in China, but that was a very different period. So, I mean, so you learn to, you know, more than the deal itself, you learn to, you know, underwrite the sponsor, you take the country risk. So it gives you a macro perspective. It again exposes to you so many different, you know, cultures, people, ways of doing business, right? And I think that again gave me a huge advantage again on top of what I already had. And then 2013 came, I said, Russell, I want to start my own business. So I moved back to Texas. And that was my thesis, which is now everyone's, you know, real deal. Even Wall Street Journal talks about it. But my thesis was to invest in workforce housing. This is 2013 I started. And I wanted to create
Let me jump in with a quick question.
Yeah.
Since you've done business in multiple countries, do you feel that the language of business is generally universal and black and white?
Yeah, look, I think there's different cultures where I always feel that it doesn't, you always have to, when you're negotiating or doing business, you have to create a win-win situation for buyer, seller, whichever party. You cannot come to where you're taking advantage of someone, and that is universal, right? That part
trading
is universal.
Trading is trading, right?
Yes, that is universal. And you take everyone along. I mean, you be courteous, you're respectful, and do business the right way. Right?
Different cultural norms, but I just get the general feeling that, you know, it is the universally spoken language, trading.
Yes, business is, yes, yeah. Yes.
Yeah, so carry on, please.
Yes, so then in 2013, I started Nitya Capital and really, you know, bought our first asset, 37 units in Louisville, Texas, and $1.3 million. Had a friend co-sign for a loan for Wells Fargo balance sheet loan for $1 million. $300,000 I was going to invest, which was my savings, but I showed it to a few friends. They said, we would love to invest $50,000. So I put my own $100,000, took four friends' money and bought this asset. And I said, well, next one I bought. Again, I'm sourcing these deals from LoopNet, right? Because I didn't know any better.
Gino just said LoopNet is back, by the way.
LoopNet's back, yeah. My friend.
I heard they got acquired by someone.
Did
no,
they?
No, so, meaning deal sourcing on LoopNet is back because we started off the same year and our first deal was on LoopNet. So
our first three deals
were loud and clear, my friend.
So I remember the first tour I show up and there's this broker, local Houston Income Property, Bishop, a good friend of mine now. And so I show up. This is a property in North Houston in Tidwell, which is very ghetto. And it's the property is called Nordling Chateau. You know, it's a French name. And there's not a single anything French for 10-mile radius.
Sounds
around,
fancy,
right?
Though.
Right? So, yeah, it's very fancy. And it was the seller was a guy named Mike Mizrachi. He has his gold chains, right? A buy, crazy guy. And so they said, so you're going to buy this? And I, you know, I was early 30s. And I said, yeah. And they said, so very, very doubtful. I mean, they probably gave me probably a 0.01% chance that I was going to close. Right? Because I was too clean and white collar at like a D-minus property at best, right?
Like this guy's in
and,
for it.
And seriously, after I acquired, I seriously thought this was the worst mistake I made. Because the day I took over, the seller was such a piece of crap. He took 20 condenser units from individual units. So he took 20 of them. And these guys show up on my office like, hey, we have a hole in the roof. I was like, what do you mean there's a hole? And the guy took the whole thing and there's a hole. So, and then he had no, my diligence sucked, right? I didn't know what I was
doing.
Did
he leave any appliances for you?
No, he never had appliances. He had special one-page leases. He had special one-page leases saying, I'm renting you this apartment for $200, but there's no appliances. And that's what the actual contracts were instead of the lease contracts.
Holy shit.
So, Swapnil, time out. I have to jump in real quick because if you want to avoid Swapnil's mistakes, go to jakeandgino.com/apply and we will save you hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars and you will not be robbed at closing like Swapnil did. The reality is, at least you took massive action and you didn't let that first disaster stop you from going to the next one. Most of us would have been stuck in fear and said, well, what do I do next? And instead, you've been talking about the last few minutes of your background of getting through adversity. That probably was just like, it's another one of those. But that
so
is,
basically,
I've never
I
heard
tell
that
you,
one.
So I had bought that apartment, 160 units. for 4 million. So it was 25,000 a unit. And I had a 500,000 capex budget. So I started with literally 60% occupancy. And I kid you not, worked like crazy, even though I was regretting it. And I sold it for 5.6 6 months later. So I doubled, 1.4 became 3 million.
Wow. Right?
Then I took that 3 million, I bought a $10 million property. Right? So long story short, from that point on, which was 2013 to 2024, we've done 129 of these, but obviously the size got bigger. So almost over 5 billion of acquisition across this 129. And what I did manage to do well, and we still continue to, except in this market, is I'm creating value and I'm looking to monetize the value pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. Right. So, like I said, 6 months for this deal, next deal, 1 year, 1 year. If I couldn't sell, I would cash out, refi, return all the equity back. Right. So, for example, an investor who had invested, let's say, $100 in the first deal and never cashed out and kept rolling, that 100 would be 970,000, right? Yeah. 9.7 times, mm-hmm. right? And so in our history, we've sold 77 of those. We have about 44, 45 assets now, 4 or 5 are commercial. And we have a perfect track record. So 77-0, 26% IRR, never have defaulted, and we'll get into that, never have missed a single mortgage payment in my entire history.
Wow.
Right?
Hey, here's the bigger question. Have you always made payroll?
Yes, 100%.
See, that's a thing that no one ever asks, but your folks always, and this is the difference between entrepreneurs.
100%,
because,
bro.
As an entrepreneur,
I mean, 600
the pay
employees
may not be
I
there
have
for
now,
you,
right?
Right?
Yeah, I have, yeah.
But they have that guarantee because you did the right thing. So before we get too long into this,
yes.
Detail, in your opinion, the market cycle from 2019 to 2024, because you've touched them all, using a baseball reference. You've seen a lot in a short window. So if you don't mind, in your own words, just detail the market cycle from 19 to today.
Look, it all the market changed because of COVID, right? That's mm-hmm. where the quantitative easing happened with the Fed, right? So not only the Fed did the quantitative easing, you had a federal government still giving so much free money, and they've been continuing to give free money since 2020, right? So 4 years of this spending like insanity. And you see that in US debt numbers and trillions. I mean, how every 120 days you're adding $1 trillion of debt? Right.
Something like that.
Just, yeah. Now US's debt burden is more than their defense spending. Yeah. Right. Which is scary. Right. If you think about it, like so what they're doing is they're just printing their own money and they're spending their own money. Jobs report came out today. You saw 300. I mean, the largest job hire is the government. So I think we're in this pretty bad, vicious cycle. So, I mean, going back to 19, the rates were pretty not too low. I think Treasury was around 4, 4.5, but the spreads were low. There was no fear. There was no risk, right? So 2020 happened. Interest rate went to zero. Of course, 2021, 2020, the greatest years that, you know, people would probably see in their lives, right? When it comes to our sector, but you can't go better.
Multifamily all-time highs for sales prices, transactions. Brokers were kings and queens, and they're singing a little bit of a different tune now. But
well, that was 2022. So 2022 was the high. So Freddie has said we're down about 15%. Cap rates have probably decompressed about a point and a half. Now, I mean, we have coaches telling us right now, C properties in marginal areas are A caps. They haven't seen A caps for C properties.
He said eight
caps, my friend, not four caps. A four caps, a foreclosure. But I mean, that's what people were buying back in 21, 22. And if they didn't get out, they're in big trouble. So you're seeing this, you know, swap low 21, 22. Are you still buying at this point? You're still buying assets at this point?
So look, I think the cycle, Gino, calls for, look, there's two things in the last 2 years I had to do. So I pretty quickly realized that this was a time to play defense, right? So really over the last 18, 24 months, because you know, we focus exclusively on affordable housing and low-income housing, I was able to work with the cities and housing authorities in different ways. And about two-thirds of my portfolios are in Texas and Florida, and there are different laws which allows for tax exemptions of different sorts. So, and property taxes, you know, are the largest expense item, right? So that's what I had been going through in the last 18 months. Now I'm in the process of monetizing it, putting long-term debt. And I mean, this portfolio too. I mean, look, this has automatic extensions to 2027. One of the requirements for them was to buy a 12-month cap. Now I'm ref there's 12 assets in this portfolio. I'm refinancing three of them by month 10. And we already know that the cap cost is going to go down. So I said I only want to buy a 6-month cap, and that's the negotiation we're having versus what is reported in the media about default. So it's all planned, it's all strategic. You're working with the
Let's talk
servicers.
on that a little bit. So there's, you know, I've seen you got this this great headshot getting thrown around there on the Real Deal and some of these things. And I haven't, full transparency, haven't dove into it that much because you're seeing this is the for the Real Deal and some of these other, you know, outlets. This is their thing now, right? This is their attention grabber.
But they don't know the damage they can cause because, you know, I have thousands of investors and lenders, and it just makes my job harder.
Oh, no, they understand fully. So don't get that twisted. They don't care, right? And it's all the way they monetize is to put whatever they can out there to get the juice pulled in, right? Yeah. So, you know, I think this is a fair time for you to, you know, describe and give your side of the story because, look, I see these things getting tossed around. There's been things, you know, about Gino myself put out there that factually were just out of left field. Like, where is this coming from? So, you know, maybe give the folks out there a little bit about the articles and the different things that have been put out there, and then your side of it. Because,
first of all, the way they put out that article,
this is the real deal you're talking about?
It sounded like I'm in default. Like, what they didn't specify is just specific to one portfolio, first of all. Right. Yeah. So now I have like 1,000 investors who are not even invested in this damn thing calling me and worrying about it, and other lenders. I said it has nothing to do. It's not like a platform level loan, first of all. Right. So this deal was a 12 asset portfolio we acquired in 2022. Right. Spread over 60% of the portfolio is in Indianapolis. And guess what? Last 2 years, Indianapolis is the hottest market in the whole country. Mm-hmm. Right. In terms of rent growth. So assets have grown, NOI has grown from 16.9 to 22.7, right? Now there's three assets in, out of this 12 are in Texas, which I got these PFC tax exempt. I'm in the process of refinancing them. And so I don't want to waste $11 million buying a 12-month cap. It's not a prudent strategy. That makes me a bad GP, right? Now this was a CMBS SASB loan. Of course, there's no real lender behind it, so you have to deal with special servicing when you're negotiating, right? So guess what? In this situation, we pre-negotiated a pre-negotiation letter with the servicer, knowing that it's coming, and so that we don't go in default, so we can negotiate, right? And and we are very close to coming to a, you know, an agreement. So, and that's why I'm doing the interview, because I know you'll probably publish it 1 week later, but so we are coming due. We're going to sign a, you know, first of all, we'll have 90 days to buy a cap. And guess what? The cap cost is coming down, right? You get, I mean, unless you keep getting the stupid job data like we got today, but hopefully if the CPI comes good for the next 2 months, then Fed is going to cut. The odds are 69% today for a June rate cut, right? So if you're buying a cap today versus you're buying a cap in June, guess which cap will be cheaper? Same duration in June.
Yes. You're attempting to do the best thing for your investors.
Absolutely. And every investors, time I've done it, like in my entire history, I've not, like you said, never missed a payroll, but I've never missed a single mortgage payment. So I don't know why the hate, right? That's my problem. It's like, I should be like an aspiration for people to look up to.
That's the media swap, Nola. Like it sells, and it's not about anything other than, you know, monetizing the eyeballs. So it's you know, you just have to be like, look at it. You're fresh meat for, you know, this platform. And, you know, I don't see any other way around it.
Schlop, no, the only thing I would say is whatever doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Yeah, this absolutely. Is just
look,
something.
I've learned to cut the noise now, Gino. And yeah. For me, it's like, let my actions speak louder than words. Right. Mm-hmm. So it's fine. I am working in, like, because of this reputation, you asked me about my acquisition. I'm now working directly with lenders in foreclosure situations where I'm buying debt deals directly with them.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So why does that they come to me, or why do they partner? Because we have good track record. Mm-hmm. Right. We have a good reputation amongst the people who need to know. Now, they can put this stuff on Instagram. Nobody cared. Like, nobody can control it. But people who've done business with me, president of one of the largest listed REIT emailed me right after the article. He said, you're one of the most entrepreneurial borrowers in our whole industry. We're always here to bank you. I'll send you the screenshot. But, you know, so you get those messages. And I'm like, it doesn't. I said, don't worry about it, Mike. I don't even look at it unless people tell me about it. But I guess that's the unfortunate part, because then people keep messaging you about it, so you can't ignore it, right?
It's annoying, though, Gino, as an entrepreneur. Sorry. His job gets harder, though,
very
because
hard.
These people now are putting fear and doubt into his investor base, and they're thinking, well, am I involved in that portfolio? And the folks that are in it are thinking it's doomsday, even though he's working it out right now. So I think that's the hard thing, is that, you know, it's brand damage and it's reputation.
Yeah, how
damage.
Do you get around it, man? And you know what? That journalist actually emailed, first of all, she emailed me, which happened to be 15 minutes before she published the article. And I happened
but
to see that email.
But that's by design, though, Swap.
And I responded and I told her it's not a freaking default. Right, it's like it's under pre-negotiation agreement, and we're
swap deal. Is that gonna sell? Is that gonna sell though?
For I know, but that's just doing. I mean, I was talking to my lawyers too. I'm like, can they? I know media has a lot of rights with this thing, but I mean, because the problem is the title they put is what people read. Nobody actually reads the article.
Yeah.
And swap the other problem.
Nobody
is,
reads. It's the headline. The headline's what sells.
If they retract it 2 months later, nobody's going to even remember that.
Nobody
that's
will not, care.
That's
the
problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll cool. pat on the back, right? Yeah, good job.
So what's the path forward look like? How do you navigate the waters now? You know, you kind of got these you know, targets on your back. You know, what do you got to do differently?
But, bro, the thing is that I thrive under pressure. And I've always had in my life. And I think, you know, it's I like to always look at the grays. I said, this is fourth quarter Michael Jordan time, right? People who are going to come out of this cycle, right, are going to be the ones who's going to go on to dominate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I want to be amongst those. So everything that I'm doing today is in that regard. Whether I'm playing defense to protect my current assets, whether I'm being aggressive on acquiring, it's all going to be in that direction where I want to be amongst the greats, right? People who survive the hardest time become the great, right? Who win in the hard time. And I'm actually feel blessed and I feel grateful that last 10 years, everyone was doing great, right? Like, who's to say why Swapnil is better than some Jack, you know, over there. So for me, I said, look, I have, this is a time when you prove your abilities, you prove your caliber. And, you know, I let my actions speak, and only time will tell, right?
Mm-hmm. Hopefully they give you the pat on the back article in 6 months when your work is out. But for some reason, I don't see that happening.
I would love it. I would love to rub it in, you know? I mean, these articles provide a lot of fuel inside. It shouldn't. I also should have a fuel always. But in a positive way for me, right? Because I'm not, it doesn't make me angry anymore. I feel 100% confident in my abilities and I know what I can show to them. So I thrive under it.
There's to me an admirable quality about it. And that's why I'm a big fan of Grant Cardone. I'm even admire President Trump, because when you're an entrepreneur and you live a lonely life, I got Jake as a partner. There's no one else I can really cry to. And when you're constantly being bombarded and whether you deserve it or not, it takes a toll on you, whether you want to listen to it or not. And to continue to go back and continue to throw punches is really an admirable thing. And for those people who don't own anything and want to sit around and make accusations against you or Jake and Gino or Grant or whatever, those of us that are doing it, we're in your corner, because we understand The heartache.
Gino just said the man in the arena quote.
Yeah. Yep. Did I? Yep. I don't know what the hell I'm saying. I'm just.
It's not the critic that counts, right? That one.
Yeah, but it could be challenging. So for anybody listening to this, you may be in a swapless situation. You may be getting lambasted, but just know that you're not alone. You're building something. There's two ways to build a bigger building. You can either tear everyone else's down, or you can make yours bigger. And it sounds like to me, Swapnil's not tearing anyone else's down. Swapnil's big and building his bigger. And we should all be focusing on our buildings. And if we all did that, man, the world would be a completely different place.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, look, in times like these, times like these are not applicable to one single person or asset. It's mm-hmm. affecting the whole industry. And this is the time where people should stick together, right? Instead of creating fear. And this is the stupidest thing, because it's not like a zoned in phenomena to one person. I mean, they report Blackstone foreclosures on hundreds of millions of dollars of assets, Starwoods. And I mean, it's the industry. It's only dependent on interest rates. Okay, there's 100% inverse correlation of valuations and cash flows. I mean, it's a simple fact. I just can't imagine how many times they're going to beat the same horn, right? Mm-hmm. Mortgage payments have gone up by this million.
There's a difference, because they'll put Blackstone and the Blackstone logo up in the ad, and everyone's like, oh, a company's foreclosed on something. Who gives a shit? Swapnil, they're putting you up there in your face. Yeah. This guy, the only one by himself with no other team members, he's the one. Burn him. Like, that's what they want, right? That sells eyeballs, and that's the goal
of it. Before we go to the break, this is something that's really important. The Swapnil, you said that I don't really want to gloss over. You say there's fear. They're promoting this fear, which absolutely. I think sucks, and it's causing a lot more uncertainty in the market. Yes. And I don't know if it's by design or not, but I mean, I can see the demand for multifamily has dropped significantly, even if you have capital. So that they're doing a big disservice, because there's still a lot of really great assets out there that you can acquire. There's still a lot of stuff
they're doing it to someone like me, whose entire history, bro, I've never lost a single penny. Uh-huh. On 8 billion of transactions, not a single stakeholder. Equity, debt, whoever you call it, mm-hmm. never lost money. So I'm like, okay, and then I feel hurt too, right? Because then my investors are questioning whatever. And I'm like, dude, look at my track record, man. Like, just have some faith for mm-hmm. things, right? Like, mm-hmm. but you know, you move on, you learn, and it happened the first. I mean, this is the 11th article, so I'm not talking about this happened this time. But you know, over 11 times, you become like whatever, right? Like. Yeah, just ignore. So we just, you know, send out an email.
Might as well do another one. Make it 12.
Yeah, I'm like, that's what I said in one of the comments. I said, use a newer picture. I look better now, I think. So.
Get one with like my shirt off, right? So at least it's flattering here. All right, guys, let's take a quick time out to hear from our sponsor.
Now, we have had a great run in multifamily, going from zero units to over $250 million in assets. That's over 2,000 apartment deals that we've been able to purchase through our framework, Buy Right, Manage Right, and Finance Right.
Now, Jake and I, we created the Jake and Gino community back in 2015. We launched our first book, Yield Our Profits. And since then, our students have closed over 60,000 units. That's over $4 billion in assets they've been able to close over the last 6 years.
And that's why this community has been so successful. We call it results-based education, and we pour back into the community everything that we've learned on our journey from zero to 2,000 units, and all our systems and scale that we use on our very own property management and investing companies.
Jake, I love that. It's not just education, it's implementation. So what I want you to do, click on that link down below, apply to work with our team, see how we can help you on your journey in multifamily.
All right, we are back. Let's talk a little bit about the path forward. Is there anything that you're doing differently on the business side of things due to the market cycle? Anything that you're changing up that, you know, maybe would add value to an early investor that's listening to the show now?
Yeah, look, this cycle, obviously, you know, whenever challenges and adversities come, you become smarter, you learn your lessons, and you try to come out better. So we're, you know, in my operations side, you know, look, we're trying to be as cost effective as possible. Because, you know, look, the truth is NOI margins, forget the capital markets, NOI margins in multifamily have come down 10% minimum. Mm-hmm. Taxes, insurance, payroll, and utilities if you're in Texas. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's 90% of your total expense per month. Your NOI margin that used to be 40%+ is 30% now. Mm-hmm. Right? So I said, okay, what can we do? So obviously we went through a lot of these PFC affordable housing tax exemption programs. So that took care of the taxes, which was 35% of your OPEX, right? Mm-hmm. And then we said, okay, insurance. Insurance has been a mess too, right? So we looked to get creative, and you know, we set up our own program, and that allowed us to save over 30% in insurance costs. This, we just renewed March 1st, and our insurance renewal was 37% cheaper. I don't think anyone in the world can do that, right? Mm-hmm. Then we are setting up systems. We're hiring a lot in India in terms of back office. We have a 70-member team in India. All accounting, asset management, a lot of the tasks get done from India now. So that allows us to keep our staff here.
I think
efficient.
That's going to become more and more prominent. I think you're going to see yes. that from groups. We've, you know, we're, you know, a fraction of your size. We only got, you know, 80 some people on the team right now, but we've started adopting that this quarter as well. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm doing a lot on that. Payroll, you know, look, industry is running at $1,400-$1,500. We're $800 a unit, right? I mean, nobody can compete. So like literally on every item of relevance where an impact could be made, we've done that. And that's what's allowed us to now be safe versus, you know,
well, think of the control that you have of being vertically integrated and being able to manage those costs versus the folks that are running third party. And I know there's, you know, most of the folks,
especially in this market, when your working capital is tight,
yes,
right? I have my own vendors, contractors. Yeah, I have a lot of payables right now, but I can delay them. But that's the game I can play because I have it under control. If you have a third party management company, they're just sending you an invoice at the end of the month.
And everything that you do, like, because we run the same way. All of our CapEx teams are doing the internal turns. We're handling a lot of the heavy lifts ourselves. And yes, it's a constant on the payroll, but I know that we're saving a ton of money on the back end at the end of the day. So yeah. It's having that control and that vertical integration that a lot of folks poo-poo at and say, no, you just got to run third party. And I, you know, vertical integration for life, baby. It's like, to me, it's the only way, because you have that control. And when things like this do happen, you're in the driver's seat versus pleading on a Zoom call with a third party to do what you need them to do. And then, you know, praying that it gets pulled through. So yeah. I feel loud and clear on that one. You know, on the personal development side, anything that you've read recently that's added value to your life?
I did. I just, a friend of mine had told me about a book called 28 Letters, 28 Letters that J.D. Rockefeller wrote to his son. So not 28, 38 letters, and there's three bonuses. There's 41 letters. And there's a book. So I just read that. Amazing book. I mean, this is, you know, the legend of, this is not even legend. This is the founder of capitalism, probably you can call, right, in America, and J.D. Rockefeller. And, you know, in these letters, it's funny because, you know, he's talking about, and it's so funny that we're talking about it. So what's so funny is one of his letters, he's just basically bitching, right, to his son. He's like, fuck this media. They all talk shit about it. And I'm like, this article had just come out of me. So I read that letter that night. I said, this is why God blessed me with this letter tonight.
That is so cool.
So I said, look, even J.D. freaking Rockefeller was getting bitched on.
It's these intersections in life that can bring you peace at times, right?
So amazing book, you know, so a lot of wisdom in that and a lot of things you kind of know, but it's almost, you know, my father passed away, unfortunately, 3 years ago, but I'd never really had a mentor to say, and really, you know, in the last few months and year, I've been so blessed with having some amazing mentors. You know, one of my mentors in life has been Ray Dalio, and he came in my life a few months ago, and I've spent some good time with him. Unbelievable, right? So, I mean, I think, and then through this thing too, I feel when I was reading this book, I felt like, you know, it's like my father writing it to me, because growing up, I was on my own from the beginning, right? Mm-hmm. So you feel that and great wisdom, of course, you know, in terms of money, finance, behavior, how to negotiate. And, you know, he's here in the book, in one of these letters, he's bitching about JP Morgan. He's like, fuck that guy. He's trying to take my, he's like, one of his letters bitching about Carnegie. And so you're reading all this shit and it's like pretty funny, you know, it's pretty interesting.
The Battle of the Titans for sure.
Yeah.
So let's give you an opportunity here, folks listening. They like the vertical things you got going on here, vertical integration. Excuse me. What's the best way for folks to get a hold of you?
My email, sagarwal@nityacapital.com. And LinkedIn, I usually check and I'm active on. So those are the two platforms.
Hit up the nityacapital.com and, check out what these guys got going on. They're doing great things over there.
Yeah.
Gino, are you ready?
I am ready, Jake. We got a young Swarthmore, born in a small town in India, decides to come to the U.S. with his family in Houston, Texas, ninth grade. His father is working at a liquor store and his mom is working at a daycare. And he's actually, first 8 years of his life in the U.S., he's actually living in an apartment complex. And he continues to work. He goes to school. He gets a finance degree and says, I'm going to go overseas in Asia, work for a few years. Gets back to the U.S. in 2013 and goes and looks at La Chateau, a 37 unit. He says, bro, there's no French people around here. I don't know what's going on. I'm going to buy this
French
deal.
Onion soup, right?
I'm going to buy this deal. And he puts together, he needs $1 million. He gets a few friends to invest. First day he owns the thing, he looks up and he goes, holy crap, there's the sky. Someone came and ripped me off. But you know what the hell's going on here? Appliances. Boy, I should have called Jake and Gino back then. They could have saved me a few bucks. But I didn't know Jake and Gino back then. But it's okay. But that didn't stop him. He continued to buy. And 1 million became 3 million. 3 million became 7 million, became 10 million. He understood the velocity of money. And that's what he's been doing ever since. And he's into, I don't know how many assets he's got, over $5 billion in transactions. Never missed a mortgage payment, never missed payroll. And he's continued to rock on. And now he's reading J.D. Rockefeller's notes and he's saying, wow, if he can get crapped on, I guess I can get crapped on too. It's okay. And listen, a lot of admiration here, brother. Keep rocking it. Don't listen to anybody. Use it as fuel. Continue to grow. Worry about yourself. Your input shapes your outlook in life. And make sure that input is coming from people you really respect, like Ray Dalio and like others who really had a profound influence in your life. So keep working on that input. Don't listen to the haters, my friend.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you for having me on your show. And it was great reconnecting.
My pleasure, brother. Jake, bring us home, brother.
You got it. Guys, as always, we believe in buying deals for the long term. Think of decades. I'm Jake. He's the G-Daddy, and we make it happen. We'll see you next time.
Thanks guys.